Hey, everybody. I am back on the road. July 16th through 18th, Stamford, Connecticut at New York Comedy Club. July 25th, added a late show, Club Soda at Montreal for Just for Laughs. And then July 31st and August 1st, four shows at the Albany Funny Bone. All those tickets available at dansoder.com. I'll see you there. Let's build this hour together. But it was cool seeing you film another special at the Beacon.
You were there, right?
No, I didn't get to go. I was on the road.
Wait, oh, yeah, okay.
But I talked to you right before you did it, and I thought it was really cool you're doing it because, obviously, this special, Ridiculous, out now on Netflix. Go watch it. But you did Hilarious there.
I did? No. I don't mean to point at you like
that.
Yeah,
I like that. But didn't you do Hilarious at the Beacon?
I did Live at the Beacon.
Live at the Beacon.
Yeah, that was my first.
Spooku. This is podcast Spooku.
Yeah.
I'm gonna fucking
cut that out.
Live at the Beacon. Edit that shit. Actually, leave it in, yes, warts and all.
You're right. I did do Live at the Beacon there.
Yeah. Live at the Beacon was great. You walked up. That was like one of my favorite intros where you like walked through the front entrance.
I went through the front door.
And it was funny watching people be like, because that's how much phones have progressively gotten worse.
Yeah.
And when you watch the intro of Live at the Beacon, people just let you walk in, and a couple of people go, oh, hey, Louie.
Yeah.
Where now they'd be like, Salve!
Yeah, definitely.
You got to, like, walk into a venue.
Yeah, it was really, when I shot the first one there because George Carlin had done one there, and it was one of his best, I thought.
Have you done that?
And he did. I mean, I stole the open from him and Pryor. They both did that.
Yeah, just to come out on stage?
Come out. Pryor went out. The lights are still up.
That's my favorite
intro. And people are running to their seats.
And then the guy comes up and
with a camera and he goes, get the fuck out of here.
And then he goes, now take the picture.
yeah.
And then the shit breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's he does the camera. White people are in your, black people are in your seat.
In your seats.
Crazy.
So he did that one. And then Carlin did one where he walks off the street. I stole it.
I love
walks
that.
Off the street from Broadway into, he put a guy playing saxophone outside.
But
he went out and he just immediately said, and people are going crazy, but he's like telling them, he just wants to get to the first joke. He goes, have you ever noticed that a lot of the women at anti-abortion rallies are women you wouldn't want to fuck in the first place?
Yeah.
First words out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Just brushback pitch.
Yeah. Just absolutely opening
up.
Don't dig in. Just punching right in the stomach.
So good.
And didn't do a lot of fanfare of coming out and being like,
No, he just went. Got right to the joke.
Yeah,
and dude. So I took that from him. This special actually opens similarly, just that I get, I say hello a tiny bit, but then I tell a joke right away.
You also come in, what I liked what you did audio-wise is, it's the music is all you hear until you say hello.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
It drops out right before, and then you go, hello. And
yeah,
I like that because there's something, I don't know if it's because I'm a comic, when I watch specials and the crowd is too like, and the guy's like, annoying. thank you. You're like, just fucking get to it.
Now, you don't want to watch somebody being adored by people that are in the room. Because then you're, what the fuck do you...
That's rock stars.
Yeah.
That's what they get to do.
Yes.
They wear open...
We're not rock stars.
No, we're fucking clowns.
The comedy rock star thing, it's not good for the jokes.
No, you're supposed to lose.
Yes.
You have to lose at every
you're
turn.
You're supposed to come out. And
go, I'm a fucking idiot. Yeah.
There's a set on YouTube I saw of Woody Allen in on a TV show in Manchester, England.
Mm-hmm.
It's black and white, and it's just a little TV studio, and they don't know who he is. And he's hanging on to the microphone stand, like the way you do when you're young at it.
Yeah.
He's like hanging on to it, and he's nervous, and he's trying to get through to them. So when you see him start to win them over, it's like, that's fucking power, you know? That's great.
Comedy always reminded me of the roller rink when you'd be scared and you're like grabbing the wall to go along.
Yeah.
And then you see like, you're like one of those old black dudes that's going around clapping.
Doing hopping
spins.
up on the skates a little bit.
It's fucking Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah.
You're coming through with like light blue skates on and I'm like grabbing the side being like, what the?
Trying to just not fall down.
Just don't fall down in front of the girls.
I still feel like that on stage a lot. I still, at the Cellar, especially when you start after the special's done and you're starting up again.
Yeah, I loved the, obviously I've seen you do it a couple times, but I loved the bit about your dad in a home because I had to put my grandma on one.
Yeah.
But my grandma's was medically induced, but yours is so, because she broke her hip. But yeah. The joke is so great because it's like there's this feeling of when you come to that part in your life where you just kind of don't want
to be around them.
You don't want to be around it.
It's an incredibly cruel and terrible thing to do, because if you think about what a family is supposed to be,
you're supposed to be there.
You're supposed to be there. You're supposed to just kind of hold them. You're supposed to change your life.
If I was a good family member,
it ruins marriages, but it's supposed to, like, you know, like my dad or my mom are, they're moving in and your wife is like, no, I don't want, I did. That's not what I signed up for. And you're like, well, feel however you want about it. It's happening. Like, that's the way life was. It still is in a lot of the world. Like, I did though that bit. I do that whenever I did that bit, I could see people relating. It's the one bit they're not just laughing at. You see them looking at each other.
They talk about it.
Fuck. Yes.
Because
there's always one person. There's always be like a mom-ish woman.
Yeah.
With her hand over her mouth going, oh God. And her husband rubbing her back. Like, I know, right?
Yeah.
But then I did it in like Saudi Arabia and they didn't know what I was talking about. They didn't understand it.
You kill your father. They say something way more brutal. When he cannot cut
you
the
You put
seed.
Him on the desert.
The sword.
And he comes and pick out his eye.
You let the hawk of time eat your...
Yes, the scorpion eat it.
That's always
this
like...
This is... You throw away.
The brutality of other countries with an American. Because you go, but I want him to be warm and soft. Yeah. And they go, it is done.
This is not.
So you die.
Yeah.
But...
No, I mean, the opposite is true. They couldn't get their head around it. Yeah. I asked a few people about it while I was there. I was like, do you put your older people in a home away from you in an institution? And they're like, what? No, they live in your house till they die.
Honestly.
You take care, especially then. That's when they need your care. Yeah. That's when you pay them for everything they did.
Some would argue that's the whole reason you have a family.
That's the whole reason.
It used to be farmers needed people to work the crops.
Yes.
And also take care of them when they die.
Yes. The person who got you from infancy to adulthood, you're not going to fucking let them have just a few years to just live and also have your kids have access to them. And
stories. What they remember.
Yes, and let them feel loved. But it was like asking people the same thing in India. And although in India, it's they told me some of us do it now.
Because they got some money.
It's, yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's changing.
They get money and they go like, so I pay this
guy. I mean,
guy.
Everybody does it more than they admit to it. But it was like saying to somebody, when your children turn 12, don't you cut off their hands and eat their hands just because... And they were like,
why would I do that? I love my child.
And I'm like, oh, that's, we do that all over.
In America, we have hand soup on their 13th birthday. Yeah. Mine was, I was my grandmother's primary care.
Yeah.
Because my dad's whole family's dead. So I was like kind of helping her out. She was in her 90s. And then she got COVID.
Your dad's whole family is dead.
Yeah. Everyone's wiped out. It's pretty cool.
Well, you're in your dad's family.
Who do you think did all the wiping out?
Nice.
Broadsword. Nice. Face me, father! That's the way. That's the one. That's what every man truly wants, is to kill his father in a sword fight.
I would love to kill my father in a sword fight.
You would be complete.
I don't need a fight. I would just like him to just stand there.
Now?
And I would just like...
I thought you make a nurse with a joke. She goes, you need to hold your sword. Your boy can't fight you unless you hold the sword. What are you doing?
He's that's the Jamaican nurse.
Yeah, from your joke.
Your son wants to kill you now with a sword.
Do you hear me? It's time for your duel. Get up. I brought you your favorite sword.
Yeah, what you doing? Put on your sweater and pick up your sword.
Don't forget you're having mashed potatoes tonight if you win.
And then you go,
It is amazing when you go see them.
It sucks.
And the Jamaican people that take care of them. And as you leave, you go like, and they're like, yeah, just go. Leave him.
I'm talking about, I'm coming from the Bay Area. Ooh, so it was all Filipinos.
Yeah.
That's everyone. Yeah. They're like, you know, I'm hitting them with a little Tagalog on the way out, you know.
And a little
like,
what?
Tagalog. That's Filipino. Mm. That's what they speak. So you're like, I don't really know any. I used to work in Alaska, and they would always be like, I'll teach you Tagalog. And I was like, the fact that I just know that word, that's enough for me. I'm good.
That's good. That's enough Tagalog. It's the name of the only Tagalog I need to know is the name of the language.
And then that's the most American thing is you go,
yeah.
And now I'm out. I'm fucking done. But when I would leave, they would be like, yeah. because I would do like a ceremoniously like, okay, so I'm going to leave.
And oh, your great, your grandmother.
Yeah. Or whatever, yeah. And they'd be like, yeah, bye.
Yeah. Last time I saw my dad, I felt bad because I didn't stay very long. And
but you tried.
But as I was leaving, they were pushing him up to his little food.
Yeah.
And he was like, ooh. Yeah. And I was like, he's fine.
He doesn't give a
Never
shit.
Never needs to see me.
My grandma stayed. So I didn't realize this about my grandma until right before she died.
Yeah.
And we found a bunch of old pictures of her. But she was an old hot girl.
Uh-huh.
So it was interesting to watch her be like.
Like what age was she hot?
Like through her 40s. Like she was a good looking lady. But watching her still be a kind of a hot girl at 96, where I was like, you know, she's in the home for a while and we're like, what can we bring you? And she's like, a brush. Because I want my hair to look nice. And you're like, oh, damn. Yeah. You're holding on.
And then
on
you go, grandma, that's not going to make your hair look nice.
Yeah. I go, Nana, it is. You look like a skeleton.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I think the hardest part was I felt like I had helped her for so long. Then she got COVID and she went to the hospital. And I talked to the doctor and I was like, selfishly.
Right. I can't go in. Right.
I go, this is where we send her to a home, right?
Right.
I remember where I was. It was at Wise Guys at Salt Lake
City. So you took care of her at home.
Well, she was living, she would refuse to move. She was like, I live by myself.
But you can make her.
Oh, yeah. I would muscle her out. But she was fine. She was living fine. She'd have to get driven places. Neighbors would drive her to the grocery store, but she was fine. And then she got COVID and to the doctor. I was like, so.
Time. Yeah.
And he went, no. He went, what I found is patients over 91 that are still doing okay, when they come out of the hospital, bring them back to their home, and then they know where everything is so they can operate
alone.
She's got 5 more years. So I was like,
incredible.
Like Michael Myers. I was like, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. And then she just sat back up and
you mean
like,
the guy from SNL?
No, not the fun Canadian.
His career?
No, that's coming back too. Yeah, I'm talking about the homicidal maniac, not the brilliant Austin Powers.
No, yeah.
She's like, don't make you horny. Like, well, my friends. But I think you're right about moving them in and your kids get to learn off them.
Yeah, but by the way, I didn't do that.
No.
No.
Oh, my God, no. This is,
no.
That's, it's like your.
My mom, we kept her at home. She got cancer, so she didn't live. She was 79 when she died. And so we took turns having her at home.
Okay, like you would switch her out.
Yeah, like, a different home. It was a little. It probably took a year off her life moving her around a little.
It's like an exhibit.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. like a moving exhibit, like those basketball. Yeah, the basketball players with the, yeah. The Chinese. That's what we did. Yeah. We skinned her and glazed her.
We ever doing different athletic poses, and my daughters can come over.
We had her slam dunk.
Or it's different life lessons. It's her knitting.
Yes.
It's like grandma stuff.
That's
oh look,
right.
She's making her favorite soup.
That's right.
And it's just the muscle.
The muscle.
The muscle of her dipping a ladle.
The teeth.
I bet in China, if you did that joke, if you would have done that joke in China, they go, well, we just give it to the body exhibit.
Sure.
Yeah. You don't even, they can be in their 40s.
I did do it in China. Well, in Hong Kong anyway.
You did?
She was there. But anyway, yeah, my mom, we sent her, we were all with her. But my dad, he's hanging on too long.
Was that?
He wants to live longer and nobody's, the interest in him tapped out.
Is that
he's living longer than people give a shit to want to be around him?
And I believe the thing is never overstay your welcome.
He's overstayed his welcome on this planet by a lot.
Is that reflective of his personality from when you were younger? Like you just see it where you go, I should have known you were going to live too long, motherfucker.
No, he's and by the way, whatever, you know. Last time I went to see him is when this bit was born because I went to see him. The thing that really happened was I went in his room. I hadn't seen him for about a year, and he looked at me like, hello.
Oh, fuck.
And I was like, hi. And he was like, yeah. And I said, it's Louis, your son. And he's like, not picking up on this. And he doesn't really have like a real big, he has sort of come and go dementia.
Sure.
But not that's not the main feature of him.
Yeah.
So I was like, Louis, and he didn't. He was sort of being polite, like, hello. And so I said, I'm going to come in and sit with you for a while. And he was like, you are? Like, it was so, I felt creepy.
Like, yeah, you're sitting, like hitting on your
dad. It's like if I went into a total stranger's room.
Oh, hello.
And said, hi, I'm going to come and sit with you. And he's like, yeah. Like,
okay, I was just thinking about the Korean War. I don't need you.
I don't know what you're doing here. But I start trying to explain to him who I am. I showed him a picture. My sister told me, you show him pictures, it brings it back, you know.
Sure.
So I showed him a picture of him and my mom. And I said, what is, he goes, that's my wedding day. That's my ex-wife, which they were divorced, but.
Yeah.
I showed him the whole family. He goes, that's my family.
You went, right?
And I go, who's that at the end? He goes, it's my son. And I go, that's me. And he's like, he selectively dementioned me out of his memory. Like, I kept talking to him about our family, our history, but he just was skipping over me. And I was like, I am here. I am. And it was pissing me off.
Yes.
Because he seemed lucid.
And he doesn't do that with your sisters?
Like, no, he's a little on and off, but not like that.
But he locks in sometimes.
He locks in once in a while, and so I was getting really uncomfortable and pissed.
Yeah.
And so I said, I figured I'm not going to see him again. I said I'm going to say some things to you, whether you know who I am or not.
Sick.
That I want to say.
But that's good for you.
It was like talking to the granite, to the tombstone, like the way you sit and talk to it. It was like that. And he's looking at me, and I'm going. Telling him things I feel about what happened when I was a kid. And I started to cry, and he fell asleep. So I got up to leave.
Hey, if you own a small business, you should be using Square. I thought Square was literally just the thing they put on the phone to take credit cards. That's what I thought it was when I signed up for the sponsor. I was like, yeah, I needed that so many times on the road when I tried to sell merch. I could have used that Square instead of telling someone to go to an ATM or get change from a bartender like an absolute jackass. But Square is more than that little square. It is that square, but it's also a platform behind the scenes of a lot of your favorite businesses. Small, big, Square simplifies the messy stuff. Works for one location shops and businesses with multiple teams or service areas. And you don't need an IT team or a degree in accounting to understand it. Square isn't just fast, smart, transparent, and built for the way people actually run their businesses. So if you're starting a business or you have a business and you're not using Square, you should check it out. Oh, that's what they wanted me to actually say. If you're starting a business or running one that deserves better, that's I naturally got there. See, I'm such an advertiser. Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/Soder. That's SQUARE.com/GO/Soder. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. If you have something that's aching you, hurting you, maybe worrying you, try ZocDoc for a doctor's appointment. You go to ZocDoc, you find a doctor you like, you get an appointment, and then all that anxiety is gone. I've been using this before they sponsored this podcast. I've been using this since the app came out. That's how much of a hypochondriac I used to be, still am sometimes, but most of the time, ZocDoc would be there to solve all my issues. ZocDoc.com or download the app. You can look for a doctor in-network so it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, and it lets you search and compare local in-network doctors. More than 150,000 providers with 200-plus specialties across all 50 states. Appointments happen fast, within a day to three. So go book them at ZocDoc.com or the app. Your mental health, your health matters, and taking care of yourself shouldn't be complicated. Find and book the right doctor with ZocDoc. Head to ZocDoc.com/Soder to get started and check that appointment off your to-do list. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder.
And I'm as sorry, I left,
is,
I had a...
That is just as someone that has struggled with dad issues his entire life and had him watch Die When I Was Young, this makes me feel so much better he died when I was 14.
Oh, no, it's horrible.
Because I can't imagine all the things that I've worked through in therapy of like things I would have said to him if I had this opportunity. And I went, and I just want to let you know, you gave up on Michelle, you gave... I would fight him. That you should challenge him. The sword fight should happen.
So I got up to leave.
He's selling the fight.
I got up to leave, and I had a snotty tissue, and I dropped it on his floor. And the room is so quiet.
Yeah, deathly quiet.
And I bend over to pick it up, and I feel gross. And I look over, and he's just watching me pick up the tissue. And that moment was the most humiliating moment of my life. Like, it's the worst I've ever felt.
You cried and filled a tissue with snot, and your dad was like, "It picked this shit up, bitch."
So I wanted to tell that story on stage initially. I was like, this story, there's something really big here. I want to tell it. And I would start to tell it, but I would walk slow to it by describing the place he's at. And the one thing that really did happen, which was there was a lady urgently saying to me, "Please help me," a lady in a wheelchair.
God, you described her as the guy, dead baby bird.
A guy that worked there, this lady needs help, and he just went like that. That happened on the way into his room. So I started with that story, and I kept explaining the place and explaining the context of the place to say what happened with my dad.
Yeah, to set
but
the
I
scene.
Couldn't tell the story. I kept setting the scene, but when I got to it, I couldn't really tell the story.
Why?
Because it was too painful. I knew that it's so painful that it must be a great bit. But I couldn't.
Is that a
I
thing?
Just failed as a comic.
I don't think you did. Well,
it turned into the. It's like an oyster, like with the the pearl, because it to cover the real pain.
Yeah.
I think it might be the longest bit I ever did in a special. It's like 13 minutes on one subject. I've never really done something that long that I can remember anyway. I haven't checked, but.
Comedically, is it still on the table? That's my question to you. Is there a way where you've described the place and that became the bit you described, you know, which a lot of people think, but I think like something as deep as that, or something is like any man that's had a, and every man has a dad.
Yes.
So many father-son relationships are so fucked up that specifically hits if you grew up with your dad and you guys liked each other, there's still probably some weirdness.
I probably won't be able to do it till he's dead.
So that was the thing I wanted to talk to you about, because my grandma died. So it's fine. But she was also, that's the whole joke is she died when she was 97. And I, in the special, I joke,
sorry for
the
that.
Phone call is kind of like, hey, it's done.
Yeah.
It's over. Because I've lost people young, and that's
like when they tell you you closed on your apartment or whatever.
You're like, congratulations, you can pick up the keys on Monday. And you go, no, it's big. It's big. What's funny is Shane was here when she died. Shane had hosted SNL for the first time, and then was in the city. So he came over, and we were watching TV. And then I got a call from it, and I went, hold on, they got a fucking, my grandma. And then I went in, and I just came and took the call and sat back down. I was like, my grandma died. And I just went back to the TV, and both Katie and Shane were like, what the fuck? And I'm like, she's 97. I don't know what you want.
Not a moment too soon.
But my question to you is obviously as someone that's influenced my entire generation with stand-up, especially with the personal level of it, you know, of you like talking about people that are living, it's how much easier is it to talk about when people are dead?
Well, yeah.
Because I've done a ton of dad jokes, and I wouldn't have had the balls if I would have known that he was living.
Oh, because they're hearing them. Well, like, I don't know if my dad, I don't think he sees the material. I don't think he'll see this bit.
Sure. Unless your sister's hilarious.
Yeah.
She gets him like, to be lucid, and phone. She goes, hey,
remember
that crying bitch you made fun of? Here you go. You had a whole fucking thing about it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But he his presence on Earth is not what makes it difficult. Like, what would he say, I guess? When somebody dies, the book is closed. Their whole story's been told.
Game's over.
So you can really, because there's always a chance with everybody. It's never too late. Like people take turns. People become different people during their lifetime. But once you're dead,
it's done.
Yeah.
And I'd also say that's probably one of the worst things about losing someone young is because you feel like the game ended quick. Where you go, we didn't have a chance to come back around and change.
Yeah, that's right.
But joke writing wise, you go.
Yeah,
you got
here we
no
go.
Editorial.
Here we go. Most of my jokes about my mom are about her being dead, about her death. Her death was a big deal to me. I was very close to my mom, and she died in 2019. And, you know, she wasn't that old.
Yeah.
And so it was dramatic, and it was a big loss. And she has had kind of like an Obi-Wan Kenobi presence in my life since then. Like, she's more omniscient.
Sure. And you think about kind of what she would think on situations.
Yeah, she's always there in a sense. And more than back when she was alive, I'd be like, I should call mom. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you kind of actually corner your parents into a place when they're alive. because it's such an overwhelming presence that you're like, I can't think about mom right now because I haven't called her in about a month and I feel like shit, so I'm not going to think about her.
And you feel bad for not visiting.
I don't have to call her at all, so I can think about her freely. I can feel her spirit more freely because there's no guilt involved.
When you do a joke about, you know, because you do a joke both about your mom dying and about your dad being in the home with your sisters, do they talk to you about your material? Are they ever like...
No, I'm... I mean, my sisters... saw they're living that with me,
but do
and
they,
of course also I exaggerate everything and everything is, you know,
it's a joke.
There's all sorts of love and small need and pain inside of the reality of it. I have one sister who really is the most that takes care of him the most, makes sure he's got everything he needs.
Sure.
And it's really hard for her. She's really suffering.
So she's
that.
Not. When she sees that joke versus your other sister, who maybe has more of a relationship like you do, where you go, I go visit them once in a while.
I think they, I mean, they just, they also, they've made an adjustment in general. I've been doing this since I was 18.
Sure.
So my sisters always go, yeah. I mean, look, I did jokes. When my mom died, I came up with a joke 10 seconds later that I did. We were all in the hallway of the hospice and we were crying. My mom was in this room. We had spent the day with her.
Sure.
With her body. And my mom had very strict wishes about just wanting to be cremated right away, not with anyone there.
Yeah.
But so this kid, can I do a, bit about it, but this kid showed up and he said, I'm here to take your mom. And he was like a sweet, but he's like a working class kid from the crematorium.
In Boston?
Yeah, where they burn like, bums and listen. Dogs.
We got to fucking take your mom.
You got to take your mom. I'm sorry for your loss, buddy. Here to take your mom.
Listen, we found a fucking pack of dogs in the back alley.
Yeah, he's got a black bag that's like kind of silk Percy looking, but it's probably been used a number of times. And you just edit this out of what you're, and you just go, okay. And he goes, I've got to get her ready, which means, you know, he has to take a woman's body and like,
And they go like, nah,
how about them fucking socks? Yeah.
And he goes, we're on a fucking skid. Shut up, bitch.
Yeah.
You got to play with
him.
So he's
in there with her and we're all crying in a ball.
Yeah.
And it hits me. He's been in there for a while.
You're like,
I really hope he's not fucking my mom.
That's really and funny.
I don't, if he is.
Yeah, that really is comedy
there's
brain,
there's nothing I can do about it.
What am I going to bust
nothing
in?
Nothing I can do about it.
But
yeah, anyway, then the only ceremony was we follow her. He had this black bag with her in it, and he put her, and he was in a minivan with a half bottle of red Gatorade in the back. You know what I mean? And like a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And he put her in there.
Yeah.
But whatever. So that a few hours later, we all had dinner, and I told my sisters all those jokes with it, and they all laughed. So they're
because they're in the moment with you.
Yes, and we're a family, and they know me, and that's my role in the family,
which is a great feeling. It is a great feeling because, you know, a lot of my cousins came together when my grandma died. We haven't spoke, or we haven't really been close. And my cousin Lisa, who I have a long bit in the special about, who was at the taping where I talked shit about her in a way that I love her.
Right.
But it's a joke where I got nervous the first time she saw it.
Sure.
And I told her kids, I go, I have this joke about your mom.
Yeah.
I'm close with her kids. And I said the joke to her oldest son, and he goes, you fucking nailed it. And I went, all right, so it's cool? And
yeah.
He goes, oh, I don't think. And he said, here's what's going to happen. Because I did the joke at the show at the Stateside Theater in Columbus, where I was like, or the South Theater, I was like, hey, I'm gonna do the joke tonight. And I just want to know your mom's reaction. And her oldest son, Zach, goes, here's how it's going to go. She's going to laugh. She's going to call you a couple days later.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Exactly what happened. Because she's going to enjoy it. She's going to feel pink and happy that she's featured in your life.
And then she called back and she was like,
but then she's not going to not take the opportunity. Like some people, even if they're not hurt, they're like, I get to be hurt. Like, it's like, I got a coupon for that.
Exactly.
I'm going to use it. I'm not going to not use it.
Which I've experienced with other people in my life. But the way she reacted to it was MVP level. She just came in. She was awesome at the special taping. She was like, you got a joke coming about me. And then you realize telling jokes about living people.
Yeah.
Way harder than about dead people.
Sure it is.
Because of that. because they get a couple days to think about it.
That's right. And also your relationship with those people is evolving. And
if you pull out a cease and desist from Lisa when and her lawyer, he goes, actually spoke to her recently. I don't think that's going to see the day of light. Because I have here a thing that says you legally are binded to not do that joke.
Getting a cough drop.
Oh, get it. Yeah. I was interested about that to know if your sisters like see that and if they go like, yeah, that's.
As far as I know, they're okay with it. And again, it's like that's the way I've always processed life. And, you know, since my mom died, I keep doing jokes about her being dead, like really dark jokes, really inappropriate jokes about her death, because it's the most important loss of my life.
Yeah.
And so that's right. I feel like the thing is that pain is like a hole. That it causes a hole in your life, and you can see all the way inside through it. You can see all the way to the other side. You can see everything. So when a very painful thing happens to you, if you're willing to really look at it, you see forever in there. And there's so many jokes in there. That's where all the best jokes are, in the most profound places. So I keep going to that.
I would attribute the quote incorrectly, but there's a musician who's had something like his father died and then his wife died and then something really bad happened and then he kept playing and they said
he was like platinum album.
He's like, oh, watch this. But they said, oh, does that inspire you? Does that like make you inspired to go make music? And he said, no, what it is their loss has left a hole inside of me, and like an instrument, I fill it and the music sounds different because of that.
That's right. That's a really good way to put it. It's like a cave.
It is. And it creates like an acoustic on a situation for how you feel about it, where you go I've in my specials talked about my dad being dead, and sometimes you get people that go, all right, we got it, your fucking dad's dead,
right?
But then there's people with dead dads who go like, fuck yeah, that same thing. And you go, and that's kind of what you're talking about with the home, where you want to say a joke where people go like, this is because similarly with my grandma, while it was happening, I was writing jokes.
Right.
And saying him to Lisa, because we were in together. I go, this is crazy. There was one point where a nurse, because this was a facility to like, it was a rehab facility / home.
She was a drug addict.
Yeah, big heroin user, which she could rock. Mm. Put her on a Stratocaster. Give her a fucking slide guitar in the home. No, but she, we were standing in the hallway and the nurse was like giving me the schedule where they go, Mondays, we do arts and crafts. And we're talking. And across the hallway, there's just an old man going, I want to go home. I want to go home. And she's going like this. Tuesdays are movie nights. And she like didn't even.
No, that's what it's like.
It didn't even take her out. She was just like.
No, every time my sister calls me and she's like, you know, they're not looking after his hearing aids, or they're like, he's having a pain and they haven't done any imaging. I'm like, he's there to fucking die.
Yeah, that's what you said.
He's there to fucking die.
You just pay him and they take him.
It's like if you were
the last place.
You bury somebody in a cemetery and then you call the people that run the cemetery and go like, is he getting anything to eat?
Do you put the boombox over the plot and play his favorite album?
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
They're dead in there.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that life, we have this weird thing about hanging on to it when it's not worth living anymore for other people.
Well, that's what it is.
We make them sit there and.
Yeah, our mortality is tied to them.
It's, yeah, we don't want to let them go.
Where it would be peaceful if you go, just kill them. Just go and
just
kill
them. Just
let them go. Where other countries might do that. Where they
yes.
go. I made the mistake when I was young of not learning a second language. If you are under the age of 20 years old, go learn another language right now. If you're over the age of 20, it's not looking good. You're over the age of 30, not looking good at all. Over the age of 40, like me, we're screwed. But you got Babbel. Babbel is built for real life. It's not a vocab list, no verbal charts, real conversation practice. Lessons are quick, practical, and built by more than 200 language experts. Unlike cramming before a trip, Babbel fits it into your actual schedule. If you got a coffee break, you can listen to it on the drive to work. Maybe, you know, before you go to bed, just practice some of your Espanol. Babbel's award-winning app has sold over 25 million subscriptions and is backed by a 14-day money-back guarantee. Who does that anymore? No one does a money-back guarantee. If you got some summer travel coming up, now's the time to start so you can actually use what you learn on the trip. Right now, Babbel is offering listeners up to 60% off. Go to babbel.com/soder. That's Babbel, BABBEL.com/soder for up to 60% off. Rules and restrictions may apply. My grandma had a dog, Buddy, that was blind and deaf, and she just like loved the thing. And I was like, this is like 10 years ago. I was like, Nana.
He can't hear you and he can't see you. And
I had a joke that his just whole life was Metallica's One video where he's just like, no sight, no sounds. Where he's like, Johnny, get your gun. Like, hello, hello. And there was a moment where I love dogs and he bumped against me and I went, oh, like that. And I loved Buddy.
Yeah.
But he bumped against me and I went, oh.
Yeah, he's gross now.
And then my grandma took the, you know, the seat up the stairs to go to bed. And she just would leave Buddy down there. And there was this moment. I told Katie, I was like, she wasn't with me, but I was like, I thought about killing it.
Sure.
I thought about going, I think this is the more merciful thing to do to this. Meanwhile, the thing's like, just like a broken fucking Roomba.
Yeah.
Going like, just like making its way around the room. And I just fucking grabbed this pillow, like grabbed it in a way where I was like, I might fucking do this.
But
like,
you didn't do it, did you?
No. And I went, fucking pussy.
So what stopped you? Because it wouldn't have been wrong.
Can I tell
you? She's up there. He won't see it coming. He won't hear it coming.
Can I tell you the real reason? Inconvenience. I was leaving the next day, and I just wanted to go home. And I didn't want to have to go like... Hey,
by the way...
Hey, I killed Buddy. And also, I probably would have cracked at some point and gone, I killed Buddy.
It's really hard to take... I mean, I don't know. I'm speaking without experience. Yeah. I've never taken a life outside of, you know, millions of bugs that I've killed.
Yeah. Which, in so your community, bugs. You're big. Yeah, they know you.
So many bugs. I'm Mosquito Hitler.
Oh, my God. You're, worse. Like, mixed.
So many.
With, like, Mussolini.
Yeah.
Bugs look at you and they go, his speeches. That's what your specials are to them, or the Hitler speeches?
That's right.
But for bugs,
it's hear just you being like,
Unst and mosquitoes and speeders.
And they're all in bunkers. Like,
not this piece of
just
shit.
Just leave us alone.
Just will you fucking leave us alone?
Yeah. But, well, stay out of my life. Stay out of my fucking life.
Yeah, just quit flying
I don't go looking for mosquitoes to kill.
No. I open my window, you come into my house.
And you just fucking make me itch.
You're fucking dead. You're sucking my blood?
Because you made me itch for a second.
Just a second. While I was having a conversation where I went, oh, fuck.
And you're fucking...
And by the way, not a simple death.
No, a total...
Just... explosion of
imagine
guts,
yeah,
of everything. If something came down and swatted you right now and me and Mike were just covered in blood and we were like and then I saw the hand go up and then go like, dating's weird, and do like a joke, I'd be like, this fucking piece of shit, this motherfucker. But killing Buddy, I think would have been I think I could have done it. And
so really take yourself through it. How do you do it, first of all?
I'll tell you what I do, is there is a moment.
Pillow is not going to do it.
Pillow would do it.
No.
He's a fucking shih tzu. I could fucking...
Yeah, but he's good. You ever try to just give...
Brother.
Pill to a dog? Yeah, just try to give a dog a pill.
But if I fucking push down...
Yeah, I hope
my dog can't hear this.
Wait, so is that how you would have done it, or how would have you done it?
Well... I could have gone like the mighty Navajo and just swung them against a rock like they would do when they...
Like by the legs?
Yeah, that's what they would do a lot of... I think it was the Comanches. When they would raid a village, they would take the children...
Yeah,
they would take the babies and bang them against rocks.
Sure.
And then they would take the kids...
No problem.
2 to 6 would become Comanche. They'd just go, you're Comanche now. Come on. Yeah. And then the kids under that, they go, we're killing you. You're a fucking problem. I think I would have had to pump myself up, right?
Yeah.
I got fucking news four
You'd
going on.
You need adrenaline?
Yeah, I'd have to go like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd have to look at him and go, oh. It would be a mix of anger and sad where I'd go, I don't want to fucking do this.
And you're inside the house?
Yeah, we're in the townhouse. My grandma's upstairs, none the wiser.
But you're going to make a mess in the kitchen?
Make a mess? He's suffocating.
Okay, so it is the pillow.
It's a pillow in the living room, and I come up from the top, down on it.
But I'm just not catching it because it's like the top of his head like this. Like, how are you getting this?
That's a very good question. And
it's
honestly, can I tell
easy,
you?
Easy, man.
As I'm working my way through this, dying, I go, fuck.
A creature that's being killed.
Yeah. We'll fight.
We'll fight. Well, you're going to get, he starts biting you. Now you're in a fight.
No. Oh, if that, I'll tell you right now, if that motherfucker came for me and tried to bite me.
Yeah.
I think he's catching a size 13 to the fucking back.
Yeah, but
of
again,
head.
I mean, take yourself through it. He's still, he's howling.
Okay.
Grandma's like, what's going on down there?
Danny!
I mean, Nana, go to bed! Nana, go to bed!
Blood everywhere, dog teeth everywhere.
Danny!
Nana, go to fucking bed!
Yeah.
You know what I do?
She's dead by the end of the story.
God, that would have saved me years.
I mean, that would have been it.
And about $45,000.
She comes tumbling because she tries to walk.
And then I got both of them?
Yeah.
And then you know what I do? I take him, I put him on her throat.
Ah.
Get rid of my fingerprints.
Murder, suicide.
I'm out the door. But honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I thought the pillow would have been an easy way, but you're right.
No, man. Fall. That's what I'm saying. You got to take yourself through stuff.
He was there. He saw where my grandma lives. She lives next to that lake. So here's what I'm thinking. He maybe weighs 13 pounds. I still got an arm on me.
Okay.
I'll throw him in the lake. Yeah. Bye.
I like that.
Bye. He's going to the bottom. That dog's blind.
I think I did this bit on stage once, but I had a dog when I was a kid, Ticket. And we got him when I was like 11, so more like later. And,
sure.
You know, and actually I was living here when he died. I went back home. Because we had to put him to sleep because he had a tumor that was like his whole face.
Remember that? You did that on an old special about, it's the joke about you get something that you know is going
to
die.
Yeah, so there's that bit. Yeah. But the thing is, when he died, we put him to sleep. And, you know, we took him to a doctor's office. They inject him with,
sure.
They shave his arm and and then he's dead. And you leave, we're like, we just left him there. So they do the doctor fucks the dog.
Taxidermies him.
Yeah, so I, from what I understood, he was just going to be in a mass grave of dogs.
Yeah, that is.
So it's just big pile of dogs.
Yeah.
And I had a dream that he woke up in the pile, like somehow they didn't give him enough.
I remember you doing this.
And then he crawled out from like under a rainstorm? Dead dogs. And then he came.
To the door. Oh my God.
And there he was again. And we're like, Ticket, you made it. And then immediately we're like, we got to do it again, buddy.
Yeah. If I did that with Buddy,
you still have cancer.
If I would have thrown Buddy in the lake,
yeah.
And then came back out and like, you know, wake up in the morning, go brush my teeth, and then the carpet's wet.
Yeah,
like I step somewhere and the carpet around. Wet, and I go, no. Yeah. And I go downstairs, and she's like, Buddy got in the water last night, and you're like, son of
no. What
bitch.
Would happen is you throw him.
Yeah,
you hear splash, and then you hear, you just hear him like.
And the way he gets back
to
the...
He comes right back to you.
Son of a bitch. I'm glad I just waited. Her other dog... So she got like another old dog. Like,
Grandma.
I know. And then she broke her hip. That's when we put her in the facility.
Yeah.
And the dog, I was like, what do you want to do with the dog? And her neighbor was like...
I don't know. I gave it to the vet.
And I went, all right.
Yeah, I don't need to know.
And
anymore.
I went...
Don't need to.
I deleted
anymore.
All the numbers. Yes. I live in New York. Good luck finding me.
Whatever.
What are you going to fly to LaGuardia and come find me? Get the fuck out of here.
When I was divorced, we had a dog, and we had a really tricky thing with like sharing custody of the kids who were little.
Yeah.
And this big dog, 70-pound fucking dog.
Yeah.
And I told my mom, the dog is a really difficult part of this situation. And my mom said, oh, don't worry, that dog will die soon. I was like, what?
Yeah.
She said, the dog knows that she has no place anymore. She'll find her way out. It was the craziest thing she'd ever said to me. But I think it was within a month, my dog ran in front of a pickup truck.
Just ended it. It was like, hey, you guys broke up the home I lived
in. She's like,
she's like, fuck this, dude. I'm fucking on my way out.
That is
fucking crazy. My dog, when I was
growing up. I loved that dog, too.
I know. Luna. Was that your number one of all time?
Well, my dog now, I think, is. My dog,
you have to
Rosie.
Say that. They're alive.
She doesn't watch your show. Yeah,
she should. Rosie, subscribe.
She watches Tucker Carlson.
Oh, dude. Why is that? Why is the favorite dog? And honestly, he's kind of on a fucking...
He's a really good dog. So interesting.
And I'm not going to lie, he's kind of on a... He's on one right now. So she's picking up Tuck at the right time.
She is. She's doing pretty good. Yeah.
I have a thing because this is Katie's first dog. And we love Myrtle. And Myrtle's great. My fiance, yeah. And I...
But she's still your girlfriend too, right?
No.
No,
I feel like she's like bride in waiting. You know? Mm. She's been bumped up. She's like comfort plus
she's
on an
like
airplane. She's not coach.
President-elect?
Yes. That's exactly. She's wife-elect. She will always go like, and Myrtle's the best dog of all time. And I go, Montana has a word. That was my dog when I was growing up. Montana. I was like, yeah, and he was the greatest dog of all time. To the point that I came back from college, was there for winter, for Christmas. He was old. He was all white-faced, golden retriever. I left. He died the next day. What a good dog.
Yeah.
He was like, you're out of here? I'll give
you. Yeah, Luna was great. Luna was wild, a little wild. She looked like a little wolf, and she was a German Shepherd Airedale mix.
Oh, that's a cool mix. So she's my big. Mom's got an Airedale.
And
big fucking dogs.
They're big.
Yeah.
And she was, we were kind of unequal. I was definitely in charge, but she was, you know, she had agency.
That's what this one does.
Yeah,
this
and you have to.
This one does shit where I go, I let this dog have too much control.
Yeah, because also Luna was a rescue, and I think she had a hard life. But one thing I learned right away, because I went, took her to a vet, and she had had something in her teeth, and she was snapping. And he said, you can't have her, let her have those boundaries. And so I would just put my hand in her mouth all the time. I would just go like this to her gums, and she's like, just like,
fuck,
I'm like, yeah, so don't forget, funny. Don't forget. By the way, that's good to do with your girlfriend, too. Yeah.
I go, get in here. I go, what is this?
Put your hand
in her tongue. I was holding her tongue.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Also,
what the fuck are you doing? I'm just letting you know. Just don't forget.
No, this is the agency that I have.
I'm that's what it was like with Luna.
I take food out of her mouth.
Yeah.
I go, what is it? What are you eating?
No, one time I was walking Luna in Venice, where we used to live, and there was a piece of shit with broken glass stuck in it. And we saw it at the same time, and I was like, don't do it.
It's
and she gobbled it up. I've got to get it out of her mouth. It's going to kill her.
Yeah.
And I'm holding her mouth open, and I'm trying to take shit and broken glass, and she's going, she wants it. And I had blood. I don't know whose blood. It was insane.
And did you, I mean, because also and now.
I think my daughter was in a stroller, too.
And you're like afraid. You're like, did she swallow any
yeah,
of it?
Yeah.
Shit or.
Yeah.
Can I tell you the worst part about having a dog in Manhattan is how many times we turn a corner and my dog just sees a piece of pizza and she's like, great.
Back.
And grabs it. And so what I'll be doing is sometimes it'll be smaller. She'll just eat a Kleenex of something.
Yeah.
And she'll eat it. And then I'll be pulling it out of her mouth. And it'll like be in got front
jizz
of.
In it.
And, yeah. It'll be on like. 5th Avenue and 30th Street, and someone will go, Dan Soder, and you go, hey.
Hey.
And I'm just reaching in her mouth, and I go,
yeah.
Hey, man, nice to meet you. I saw you at the cellar last night. You go, great.
Yeah.
Get the fuck. And she's yeah. like, hey. Just,
and you're touching crack addict piss.
Yeah, I'm just holding a fucking thing of.
No, my dog now doesn't do that. She doesn't.
Really?
She's so docile and compliant.
Oh.
Even if she doesn't. Like, you could take her paw. And she just like look at you, and you could just twist it off.
Yeah,
she would just go like,
"I wish you didn't."
It really sucks for me, but she would just let you.
Yeah, my dog plays mental games like a real housewife, where like sometimes she's like, "I love you." Now I'm mad at you, and I only will talk to mom. And you're like,
yeah.
"Bitch, what did I do to you? I did nothing. Oh, because I ripped the Kleenex out of your mouth." She'll do stuff where she'll, the funniest thing she does is she loves to poop next to cars, but like with her face like far from the door. So what she does is she always happens to find a car with a motherfucker sitting in it.
Yeah.
And then it's just me standing outside their car. And then like I had a guy on his phone. And he went, holy shit. And I went, I'm sorry. And then he went, oh, it's all right. My dog is alone. All, setting up a trap for this guy.
No, my dog is very beautiful and lovely. People love her.
Sure.
And I walk her every day in a little alley in New York where it's next to NYU. And
okay.
It's a very bucolic alley. So all the NYU students get their pictures taken there. And so you see a lot of people in caps and gowns.
Sure.
But also, a lot of young couples go there because women like to be photographed there.
Yeah.
So you see couples like the boyfriend is taking the picture. You know, you've seen this a million times now. It's a new thing. The boyfriend takes the picture and she's like this. And then she goes, let me see it.
Yeah.
And she looks, she goes, no, 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 no. And she gives new instructions.
Back to Video Village.
Yes. So they go, exactly. So she gets kills and he does, you know.
Yeah, dude, that's brutal. I'm so glad I'm in my 40s and just past that stage where we don't have to
Because it's a little alley with no cars. I can let Rosie off the leash a little because she poops a little faster that way.
Yeah, the freedom.
And then she goes, if somebody goes, oh, she goes over and they like to take pictures with her.
That's
so
cool.
She's become, One time I was just sitting, I was like sick and I'm walking with Rosie and I were both, I don't know, we'd been through something together. Like
yeah.
We're both sick all night. We get sick at the same time, That's me and my fun. Dog. And we're walking in the alley and this girl and her friends are taking pictures and she goes, "Oh my God, can we take a picture with your dog?" And I just go, "Yeah." And I just, I click the leash off and I just said, "Go take a picture." And Rosie just walks over and she sits facing the camera. Like she just sits.
So old hat.
And they were like, "What the fuck?" She's just like, "Go ahead, just
Rosie
take
goes,
it.
Listen, here's the deal.
Yeah.
I've been up all night. Yeah. We're going to do three shots. I'm going to let you edit one of them. Okay, are we in there? Are we in?
Yeah.
Take the shot."
That's exactly
I
what happened.
I have a worse problem where Myrtle will pin the leash when any woman goes, "A dog!" And we'll be on Broadway, middle of fucking crowd, and Myrtle will go, "Hah!" And just put all of her weight, and I'm like, "Hah!" And then I look like abusive, because I'm like, "Get back here, you fucking bitch!" And she's like, "Hah!" She's just chaotic. She just brings it, which I love, but she does bring it. Fuck, there are two things I wanted to ask you about before before you leave.
Yeah.
One of them was, I watched Pootie Tang last weekend.
Oh, God.
It was, but can I tell you something?
Yeah.
What if, how fun was it to make that movie?
It was fun to film.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You can tell. I know people are like, I enjoy
what
it.
Are they, what's that noise?
They go, movie fucking sucked.
I knew that was, there was a lot packed in that.
I watched it being like, I had so much fun watching it because it was like eating something that they no longer make.
Yeah, where I you guess were
like,
right.
They don't make fun movies like that.
Yeah.
Like the entire purpose, first off, watching Dave Attell act in a role.
Dave Attell didn't want to be, he didn't want to do it. Like he doesn't want to, he just wants to live his life.
Yeah.
So like we'd be filming a scene where he's in the scenes with Robert Vaughn.
Yeah, he plays his right hand man.
Yeah. So we're shooting a scene where it's like me and Robert Vaughn and he's there. And Dave kept pitching me things. Like most comics pitch ideas because they want more time.
Sure.
But he's like, "How about if I say, Mr. Lecter, let me go get the car and I leave?" Because he just wanted to go smoke cigarettes outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd go like, he kept pitching ways to get out of the scene.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, "Dave, if you're willing to stand here for 1 hour, you're in the movie forever. Like, then you don't have to, you can go home and then you're in the movie."
That's a good way of putting it.
Forever and ever.
Yeah.
But if you leave, you're not in it.
You're not going
to
be around.
I just need an hour of your, and he's just like, "Can I just like get his, take his coat and then just go to the closet and then not come back?"
Because a lot of times when Attell is in stuff, he's just Attell. Like in Trainwreck, he played the bum, but he was Attell. And this was like the first thing I saw of Attell.
He was good. He's a good actor. Great. Yeah, he is.
And he's like a good shitty henchman.
Yes, he is.
To take out Pootie Tang.
Yes.
The cameos, by the way, if you rewatch Pootie Tang, you had everybody in that movie.
I don't remember.
I mean, J.B. Smooth, obviously, and Chris Rock is as Pootie Tang's friends.
Yeah.
But Jennifer...
Jennifer Coolidge.
Coolidge is awesome.
I wrote that part for her.
She's phenomenal.
She's one of the funniest people in the world.
She's the Darth Vader of the Pootie Tang.
That's
world.
Right.
Of
yeah, Wanda Sykes is in it. She's great.
Is the running? I loved Wanda Sykes, but Todd Barry getting the hooker.
Yes, Todd
like,
Barry.
There's like a little Todd Barry cameo.
Yes,
there's
Rick
cameos.
Shapiro.
Rick Shapiro is the bum that he kills.
He shoots him. Yeah.
And then when he's
shooting the gun, he's going bang, bang, bang while he's shooting an actual gun.
Yeah.
He's saying bang.
He was so Rick Shapiro.
Bang, bang.
Obviously, he's like really Rick Shapiro in Lucky Louie.
Yeah.
But you got like a perfect encapsulation of Rick Shapiro.
That's right.
He's like, "Booty Tang." And he comes out with the knife and he's like, "Fuck you, man." And then he whoops his ass. But there was so many, if you're a comedy fan, watching that feels so fun. Because you just go like, "Oh, that's..."
Keep seeing those people,
You see those people and you go, what they became.
Yeah.
Also, that was my first real experience with J.B. Smooth when I was younger.
J.B. was the greatest. I made a movie a couple of years before that called Tomorrow Night. And he's like the star, like he's his co-star. He's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But I love J.B. He's one of the funniest people in the world.
But that was my first experience with him.
Yeah,
I remember watching it. And then I wanted to rewatch it. And I remember, I put it on and I was like, "Dude, we don't fucking make movies that are..."
Well, it was a real mess because I made it and I really, Paramount paid for it. Chris was a really big star. And
so that was right after Bigger and Blacker?
I think so. Well, he was doing the Chris Rock show, and I was writing for him.
Yeah,
and we were winning. We won an Emmy for writing on the show, and he was just all over the place. He was killing.
Yeah,
and Pootie Tang was a character that I had written for the show as a guest on his show.
Yeah, I remember that.
Played by Lance, who was just the guy in the office next to me, Lance Crowther, who was really great.
So that's how you got him.
Lance was my friend, and he's him and Ali LeRoy were a comedy team. They had a comedy team back in the 80s called Mary Wong. That was the name of their comedy team. And the two of them used to perform together in comedy clubs in New York. That's how I got to know them. And then we all were writers on the show, all of us, all three of us, and Wanda.
And Wanda, right?
And so I had this idea because we used to have guests on the show like Lenny Kravitz and and Maxwell, I think his name was. I think his name was Maxwell.
Oh, yeah, it was.
I think Maxwell was the guy who really became Pootie Tang because he would come on with a shirt that showed both nipples.
Yeah, which also could be Kravitz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chris would talk to him and he'd just go, it's
just all sex and all the time.
Yeah, and then I had this because I used to, when I was a kid, I used to talk nonsense a lot. Yeah. I used to just, the Pootie Tang language has a black feeling to it, but it's from when I was little. I used to say like Pootie Tang on the Clannish Santa Planet, Clanny Planny. I used to just talk like that with my friends.
So Sarate.
Sarate, man. Yeah, so I just had him just being like, just saying this, you know. I'm on Dane on the Diddy's.
On the flip side,
for Chris to go, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we did it, the first time we did it on the show, it just exploded. Like, there was people on Hot 97 radio, like, talking about it. And
really?
And everywhere, suddenly, faster than was possible.
When so it was it was like a viral thing.
It was huge. And this was back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And we would go, we shot a thing where he's running for president. We did, like, a campaign spot. So we took him out into the street to shoot some pieces. And people flocked to him. And it was like, this isn't even, there's no way this many people have seen it. But there's something in the air about him.
Yeah.
So I wrote the movie, and it was like a kind of, you know, it was this adventure, strange thing, and they gave us $3 million to make it, which is very little amount of money.
My eyes just lit up in today's current thing. I went, holy shit.
Yeah, no, it's like nothing.
So that back then was like,
no, because it was a real 35 millimeter movie.
Yeah.
And anyway. So then Paramount got an idea that it might be really a big deal. So suddenly, because it was supposed to be with a small division.
Sure.
But then they ate it, and suddenly there was pressure for the thing to succeed.
Is that what ruined it?
I think so, because, well, also, I was brand new at making films. It was a lot of pressure. Shooting it was pure joy, but when I cut it linear, this is a movie about a guy named Pootie Tang, and it's a serious movie.
Yeah.
And I cut it just, here's what happens next. Yeah, there was no flash to it. And they hated it. They hated it. And I got fired from the movie. And they recut it and put in all this goofy stuff.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Narration and stuff that was not my thing.
The one thing I was going to ask, which doesn't seem your style, after watching Louie, after watching other stuff you've made, it seemed like they cut it like a music video.
Yeah, they did. That was the idea.
Do you know when they in Austin Powers where they'd do the scenes and he'd be dancing with like the sexy girls and
right.
go to the next scene? That's what it felt like a little bit.
Yeah, there was that kind of feeling to it. And also they explained some of the jokes.
Sure.
Like there's a scene where Pootie lives in a nightclub called Pootie's and then he goes up in this red elevator from the inside of the nightclub to his apartment.
Awesome.
And so the crowd, because he performs with Missy Elliott.
Yes.
And then he gets mobbed all the way to the elevator, and one girl gets in with him.
And she's crying on his shoulder the whole time.
Screaming and he's
at first it looks like they're having sex, and then when it pulls out and they both have their pants on.
Yeah, no, she's just clawing on him.
What do I gotta
do? And he just wants to go home. Yeah. So he leaves her outside and she's screaming at the door.
Yeah.
And then he pushes out a little saucer of milk. And she gets on her hands and knees and she drinks it. That's the scene. And it was a scene that was just a kind of a silent. It's a thing as an audience, you just observed this scene and you'd go, what the fuck did I just watch? So they didn't like it, Paramount. They're like, what is he, gay? They're like, they want him to be getting laid and stuff.
Slamming ass.
Yeah, so the movie has narration where it says, like, I know you're wondering,
yeah,
why didn't he have sex with her?
Yeah.
Because she's drinking milk off the floor. She's crazy. Like, they explain it. It really broke my heart when I saw that. I was like, why would you explain that? Why wouldn't you just let an audience be curious and wonder what the fuck they just watched?
When do you see that? When you're fired from a movie like that and they recut it, do you see it when it comes out like everybody else?
Not well. So it was a bad loss. Like, I got kicked. When I was kicked off of it, it was bad. Like, my last day in the editing room, I was, they told, I went back to my hotel. They're like, we have, no one's paying your bill at the hotel. Like, they, it was like, they were so mad. It was really violent.
Really? Heart,
yeah, it was really bad news.
Oh, my. You were back to the hotel,
but I was really upset at the time. But anyway, yeah. And then, so I just left. I said, okay, you can have it. And then I was doing an interview for like Entertainment Weekly or somebody, and they said, how do you feel? Because the movie was about to come out. And I said, I don't know. I haven't seen it. And so Paramount caught wind of it, that I said that. And they made a gesture and said, let us fly you out and show you the cut. And so I went out to L.A. and I just sat in a room, in a big screening room, and there's a projectionist with thick glasses. Yeah. And he goes, what are you here for? And I go, I'm here to watch Pootie Tang. And he goes, I heard that's a stinker.
Oh, no. Oh, you go, fuck you, library man. What the fuck?
He's like, he wasn't wrong.
I know, but that's
And then I sat there and I watched it.
Were you by yourself?
By myself, completely alone. I just sat and I watched it, and I was like, oof. I hated it.
Were there parts, were there things that you made that you liked that you watched them destroy?
I think the scene with the with him and the, well, yeah, they everything. They put in jokes through narration on everything, and I just thought it was horrible.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. Also, to be clear, my cut was indefensible.
Really?
Yeah, my cut was
Have you ever
insane.
Gone back and like...
No, I never really went back and
if
watched
If you went back
it.
And watched it now, where you have all this experience, and you're like...
I'd like to someday sit and watch it. It's the somewhere... My editor, Doug Abel, who's a great guy, he edited the movie with me. We both got fired.
Yeah, but fun though.
He recently sent
Getting
me...
Getting fired with a friend is always better.
We have like an offline, like the Avid offline low-res... I think it's the only version of the original Pootie Tang cut. There's no narration. It's just like taking the story very seriously all the way throughout.
I got it.
There are some things in it when I watched it that they managed to keep. And I think the people who did it,
yeah,
did a good job. Like, sure. They did a good job.
They did the job they were hired for.
That's exactly right.
They were hatching.
And a lot of people love the movie. So that's just me. And obviously, I'm too close to it.
I would say they love Pootie Tang. I think Pootie Tang is the character that you like the movie where you don't go,
yeah.
Oh, I love the whole movie. I
That's
like
right.
The Pootie Tang stuff where Pootie Tang did this, and I like this scene.
Yeah, but that, you know, I don't have any regrets about it. I learned a lot.
But that's interesting. I didn't even know that you got fired from that after watching that. I was like,
yeah.
Because watching it stylistically, you're like, this doesn't feel like Louis.
No.
There's a lot of stuff that doesn't feel, when you see written and directed by Louis C.K., you go, after watching Louis... You know, and watching Lucky Louie and all that stuff, you go, there's a lot more, he's more artistic than this. Like,
oh, thank you.
This, it felt like a TRL music video.
Yeah, it's goofy.
Yeah. And then finally, before you leave, I don't think anybody that knows me and has known me forever knows the infamous story. This was like 2000, you don't remember this, but I've always wanted to talk to you about this because I've carried around. Carried around this shame.
What the fuck?
2000, and you were Shameless just came out. You were building Chewed Up.
2007.
07. 07, 08.
Yeah,
eight. Because we would run to where you were doing sets.
Mm.
And Joe List, you didn't know Joe at the time.
Didn't know him.
Joe and I, this is when we were becoming best friends.
Yeah.
And we, at the old
Boston. In the city?
Yeah. In the old Boston was called. It got bought out, and it got changed to the Comedy Village.
Right.
And it was next to the firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe got hired to MC the Monday night shows there, which were a marathon. They'd start at 8 p.m. and they'd go till 2 a.m.
Wow.
All barked in audience.
Wow.
And I was one of the barkers down. I found if I sat on the stool in front of the club, I could smoke cigarettes, talk to other comics, and then occasionally go, hey, great comedy show. And they countered it as barking, but I was just hanging out.
Yeah, sure.
And Joe and I were drinking. And this is when Joe and I both of us have stopped drinking. Both of us were heavy drinkers.
Yeah.
And one of the waitresses liked both of us. She was just cool to us.
Yeah.
And she would give us these fucking big shots of Jameson. Mm. So we'd drink Jameson, and we'd have Budweiser right inside the door, and we'd sit outside, and it was, I mean, when you're an open micer and you're falling in love with New York comedy and you're like really getting into it.
Sure, I remember those days.
It's the best. And yeah. Joe was opening for DePaulo.
Yeah.
So Joe actually knew real comics.
Sure.
And Joe, so there's one night, it's a Monday night, and Joe is like, oh, DePaulo's at the Cellar. I got to go over there and get my check. I think they just did like the Hartford Funny Bone together.
Okay.
And he's like, so I got to go get my check from DePaulo. If he jumps off, go on and bring up the next comic.
The guy who's on stage.
Yeah, whoever's on. Okay. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. I'm hanging out. So I'm hanging out, and Joe comes back, and he like goes and brings up the next comic. And we sit outside. He goes, fucking Louie's going on around the corner. And I go, oh, hell yeah. And he goes, I bet he'd go up here. I bet he'd go up if you told him we had a show going. Yeah. And I go, yeah. And he goes, all right, so go to the Cellar. And let him know we got a show going. And I go, fucking, all right. I'm a massive comedy fan. Like, it is, right.
How old are you at this point?
23 years old.
And I was about 40.
Yeah. You were 41. It's like, I'll tell you how deep I was into it. Like, you talked to me and Matt Ruby and a couple other people on the train one time after you put out Shameless.
Yeah.
And I just asked you about the venue. Yeah. But the whole time I was just like, think of something that he can answer. And I was like, I like the Peter Fonda Theater. That's a cool venue. And you're like, oh, it was pretty up close. And then you're like, and we went on and did a mic. But so I was like, all right, I made a similar mistake with Patrice, where I had a nice interaction thinking.
So you thought that was.
We're shorthand. I can talk to Patrice. And then Patrice just fucking swatted it away. You know, it gave me like, don't talk to me, open micer.
Okay.
And so I'm nervous going over.
Yeah.
And you're on stage in Shaq. R.I.P., the old bouncer at the Cellar.
Yeah.
The guy that looked like Shaquille O'Neal. Everyone called him Shaq. Big J had introduced me to him. So Shaq would let me into the Cellar to watch comics. I could go stand by the Ray Romano.
You weren't working there yet.
No. Year, gotcha. 4 or 5 years out from working at the Cellar. Yeah. I'm an open micer.
Yeah.
I'm a barker. I'm just like barking or whatever. And I'm like, great. And I'm a little drunk. I've been drinking with Joe. And I go around the corner and I go, Shaq, is Louie on? And he goes, yeah, Louis's on. You can watch him. And I go, great. And I run down there, and you were doing the joke about when girls go crazy, they show their tits. When women go crazy, they drown their kids in a bathtub. And so you were like, you closed on it, and I got to see you do that joke. And I was like, that's great. And then we're in the hallway. You walk out in the hallway.
Yeah.
And I'm an open micer, and I'm trying. This was the worst thing I could have done, was I was trying to use slang instead of just saying what it was.
Oh, no.
So instead of going, terrible. Hey, we have a show around the corner at the Old Boston.
Right.
It's a couple people, but I know you're working out material.
Yeah,
it would've been like, if you want to come over there, we're going to be there all night.
Putting myself in that moment, I would have been like, oh, that's nice. Thank you. That's what
my dumbass.
What'd you say?
Oh, fuck, Louie. You get off stage.
I don't remember this at all.
I know you don't, and you shouldn't, and that makes me very happy.
So far, none of it is me, so I couldn't remember your memories.
So you come out in the hallway. We're in the back hallway.
You ever watch a movie that's all flashback from one person's point of view, but they keep having scenes that he's not in?
Yeah. And then
like,
you go,
how'd you remember that?
Yeah, that's impossible. You were
like
there.
Dream. There's movies that are like a whole dream, but like he wasn't in that scene.
Or they hear
dream.
Dialogue where you go, you couldn't have even heard that.
Or just a tangent.
Yeah.
Sometime in the cheapest movies, there's a guy looking at somebody with binoculars.
Yes.
So you see the inside, but inside of the binoculars, there's cutting. There's like close ups.
Really funny.
Like, it's wow, like those angles. Are amazing. That's amazing really funny. Binoculars.
How'd you get an upshot with those binoculars?
Yeah, it's like trading singles inside. Anyway, go on. So instead of saying, hey, we're doing a show, would you like to do a set?
You come out and I go, great set, Louie. And you go, thanks, man. And I go, oh, that last joke's killer. And you go, thanks, man. And you're like looking at your notes and you're about to walk up the steps to go to the Olive Tree.
Sure.
And I go, the Village is working. And you go, what? And I go.
What?
And I go, the Village is working. And again, you're very polite. You go, what? And then I see your face go into this like, and I go, I don't know what I'm talking about. And you go, I don't know what you're talking about either. And then you turn and you go up the steps.
Oh my God.
I remember this like it was fucking yesterday.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
It was summer and it was warm. And I go outside and I light a cigarette and I turn the corner to walk back up. And Joe List, both of our close friends,
yeah,
He's standing out front doing a very Joe List thing where he's going like this. He's going.
Yeah.
Woo! And he's gone. Did you talk to him? And I went. I told him the village is working. And Joe crumps up his nose like he always does. And he goes, what the fuck did you say? And he's still got his Boston accent. He goes, what the fuck did you say? And I go, I said the village is working. And Joe goes,
no.
We're in the village.
Yeah, well, that makes no sense at all.
I don't know. And I remember slumping down on that fucking stool outside and being
no.
like, fuck. And he goes, you should have just. And so for the rest of the, I mean, for like weeks after that, Joe was like,
incredible.
Hey, Louis around the corner. You want to go tell him the fucking village is
That's
working?
That's incredible.
I was like, dude, there's going to be a day where I
I'm so relieved because I was worried like that I was an asshole in
Brother,
this story.
You were polite.
More polite. That is 100% your fault.
100% my fault. And absolutely, I know where the moment was.
No.
You know what it was? And this is where a lot of people get in trouble. They try to be something they aren't.
Yes.
They're a poser. And I was being a poser.
Well, and also having had a conversation like when I was that age, 20s, maybe same age.
Yeah.
Maybe same exact situation, working at Boston Comedy Club at the same location.
Yeah.
And being in the village, wishing I could work at the Cellar.
Yeah.
Knowing a doorman, a different generation doorman who would let me go down and watch till SD would go, get the fuck out. I get kicked out all the time.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Because I'd stand in the hallway and try to see.
And you go in the doorway and you're like, look?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And
that's awesome. That's just.
You know, Bill Hicks would be on stage or Alan Havey or, you know, John Stewart.
John Stewart.
Dude. Jerry, all these guys. And so the thing was, though, that in Boston, I opened for Jerry Seinfeld when I was like 19.
Yeah.
At a club in Boston called the Paradise. You can still do stand up there. It's a great room.
Really?
And I opened for him there. He was doing like, it was like a 900 seat room.
Sure.
So he was that level. He didn't have a series yet. And so I opened for him there and he liked me. So he took me to a few places.
Great.
And I got to know him. And then he tossed me, stopped using me.
Sure.
But I was at Catch a Rising Star in New York and I was sitting on the stool and he came in. He was doing Letterman. And back then when someone was doing Letterman, it was this thing, Jerry's going to be on Letterman tomorrow. And he's at every club working it out.
I caught the very tail end of that when I moved here in like 06. They were like, if you were doing Conan, the producer was with them. And
That's
they
right.
were going like everywhere. So, Broadway,
yes,
Caroline's.
And back then to do Letterman was a life changing. It was a big deal. And so Jerry was walking around with Mario Joyner. And they were working out the set together. And I was at
Catch. He's also a Pootie Tang.
Yes, he is. So I'm at Catch, and Jerry walks in, and there's a hubbub that he's here to do his 5 minutes and go. And he does I'm watching him. I'm sitting right in the stool that's right by the kitchen, and he does the set, and I saw a bit for him. I saw a tag. And I knew him a little from Boston. And he walked. It was a bit where he was talking about milk, and he was talking about how once you're racing against the expiration date. You have too much milk. You're washing your face. It was a great bit. And he said, how do they know that's the date? How do they know that that day is the day? That was it. That's all he had. And I was like, I got it.
Yeah.
So he's coming off stage, and I just go, Jerry. And he looks at me like, no, this kid. What? And I go, I got a bit. And he goes, go ahead. He's kind of like, you have 10 seconds. And I go, you say, how do you know that's the day? Is the guy milking the cow, and the cow goes, July 3rd.
That's very funny.
And I knew it would work because of his funny face being a cow.
Yeah, the commenting.
And he goes, oh, thank you. I go, yeah. So then he does it. I watch Letterman. He's on panel with Letterman. And this is a point in my career where I was nobody, and the Letterman was like on the other side of a thick wall like Hannibal Lecter, just like a thick, can't touch him.
Yeah.
I myself cannot.
I cannot. Did you smell my premise? What did Multiple Mix say to you? He said that premise has been done.
He said I can smell your cunt.
How can he smell your cunt?
I can smell your cunt.
I can smell your cunt. It's coming through the wall. I threw my cum on you.
I myself could not smell his cunt. I could not smell Letterman's cunt.
I want to call the episode that, but I know we can't.
Yeah. So Jerry's on Letterman, he's sitting on panel, he's telling jokes, and he does that thing. How do they know that that's the day? I'm listening, the crowd's building. That was the day. Are they milking the cow? The cow goes, July 3rd. Fucking explosive applause. And Letterman comes out of the applause and goes, "The cow says July 3rd. And Jerry goes, "Yeah, the cow." And they reiterate it. And I was just like, how this is incredible.
And you're in your apartment. Is this when you're living with DePaulo and Astoria?
By myself on Bleecker Street with a Murphy bed.
Oh, my God. Charles in Charge.
Yes.
Shit.
And I had a VHS tape of it that I still think I have somewhere.
Gotta hold on to
that. I think I still have it.
That feels tape. So great.
I was just like, and so the next day I'm walking around, I think Central Park, and I see Jerry. I bump into him on the street, and he goes, "Hey, your bit killed." And he goes, "Now you know that your mind, the way you think and your comedy, it can work in the big leagues. Like, now you know that." And I was like, so I felt like now me and Jerry are, you know, we're connected. I got a Letterman thing.
Thick as thieves.
So then like a month later, he goes on the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson.
Sure.
He does the joke again. I think he closed with it. Kills. And so then I see him at Catch and I just walk up real familiar. "Hey, I saw you did the bit on Carson." And he goes, "What?" I was like, "Do you remember the cow?" No. And he's like, "Oh. Uh-huh."
Oh, man.
He's kind of like, "That's enough now."
Oh, man.
"That's enough now."
That was Patrice going, "Ugh."
Yeah, just no.
Ugh.
It's a weird thing. Comedians have a weird Darwin thing inside of us that we will slap guys down a little bit.
"That's enough."
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, stop it. Stop it. And I don't like myself for it, but I feel like I'm fulfilling some kind of role that I'm not aware of.
You know what it is? It's nature. It is nature. And when you don't, the herd gets out of control if you don't cull it.
Yeah.
You have to go, like, sometimes go, "Shut the fuck up."
Yes.
And I talk to Bobby Kelly about this all the time. My generation, we failed because we weren't mean enough to the people after us.
Right.
Where we could have gone, "Shut up, you fucking hack. Stop doing crowd work."
Some kind of a deal that you need to. It's like, I'm reading this biography of Abraham Lincoln. It's by Carl Sandburg, and it's very detailed. And
sure.
It's when he was living in Kentucky, and he was a real ham, and he would sit on a fence post in town, and he would just talk shit.
Crazy. Lincoln.
And his father would be walking by sometimes, and he'd see his son just, like, talking, and he just fucking knock him off.
That's just push him off the fence. Just
push him off the fence.
Shut the fuck up. And then he gets up. He's like, anyways.
Yeah, like I was saying.
Fuck my dad. Whatever.
Yeah,
he came by.
Yeah.
I'm going to sword fight that cocksucker one day. Yeah. And I hope he's old. Ridiculous is out on Netflix.
Right.
Go
now.
Watch it.
Yes.
Thanks for coming by, dude.
Thanks. That was really fun.
That was a fun hang.
Yeah, dude. Man. Fucking A.